WBRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello and welcome to episode 586 of BRB UK. I am Coleman. Hi! Joined this week by one Mr. Tim.
Hello!
And no Dan.
No Dan.
He's been called away for work, unfortunately, but that's okay. While the doctor's away, the boys will ramble about asinine BS for way too long, like we usually do. But that's okay, because we got video games to be talking about. And Tim.
Yes.
It's rare this happened, and the words V and R don't appear at the end of it, but you're on the cutting edge of video game releases.
I am.
The most recent video game release for the PlayStation 5. That just happens to be an exclusive as well.
Yeah.
Rise of the Ronin.
Mm.
Now,
yeah, go on.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, before we get into the actual game, I just wanted to talk about one thing at the moment, because for a while now I've realised this releasing is the same time as Dragon's Dogma 2. And I was a bit hesitant because I always kind of wanted to like Dragon's Dogma. I think I owned more than one copy of it at different times and never played it. But it's one of those things where I kind of like the look of it. It looks fun. And reviews came out for Dragon's Dogma 2 first, and then the day after, like, reviews for Rise of the Ronin came out. And the initial reviews, at least, for both, they were a bit mixed on Rise of the Ronin, so I was like, oh, well, no, I've already pre-ordered this now. It's too late to back away. But everything was very positive on Dragon's Dogma 2, so I was like, have I made the wrong choice, possibly? And then there has been a bit of hubbub this week because they didn't release all the microtransactions to the reviewers. And then they kind of came out and released the microtransactions shortly afterwards. And that has attracted some warranted negativity and criticism. And I think that is one thing where I was a bit down on it. I was like, oh, have I made the right decision? And then I was kind of felt a bit vindicated because I was like, as good as Dragon Dogma 2 does look, and I'll preface it with the fact that it does look good and there's some really fun things to be had, and like you could possibly forgive some of the things that they're selling because they're slightly superfluous. You don't necessarily need them to enjoy the game, but it does make some questionable, like you start questioning the design choices of the people that made the game. And also they're quite highly priced, so I can understand entirely why people are criticizing. But it made me glad to not support buying that game, basically. So I at least feel vindicated in that regard.
I am still firmly in the gate of, if you want to put microtransactions in your video game, then you should be giving your video game away for free. I don't want to pay £70 or £50, £60, £70 for a video game and then get thrown a bunch of microtransactions, even if they are just superfluous, non-needed microtransactions, like the red orbs in Devil May Cry or the silver in Destiny, you know, stuff like that. And they've done it with WWE. Last few WWE games, they've been doing microtransactions in there to buy a currency to get.
Do you have to pay extra to get more than pants? Is that how it works?
No, it's to get the cards. I was talking about the cards in my faction again. And it's something I'd like to get into, but I refuse to spend real world money on that game because that game was, I got it for 50, but that is a retail price of $69.99. So it seems shady.
Yeah, and I kind of support your decision to feel that way. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to knock you for it, and it's absolutely fine. And I understand why you and other people feel that way as well. Stephanie Sterling has been quite vocal on this, as often is on microtransactions, and actually convinced
me. That doesn't sound like her.
No, that actually convinced me to kind of change my mind on this a little bit as well. Because when I kind of heard that they were, you know, as I said, mainly superfluous and maybe that excuses some of it. And my attitude towards some of those things has always been, well, I can resist those things. Therefore, if you're going to get like idiots with more money than sense to support the price of my game not going up as much, then that kind of benefits me. So I don't mind as much. But that's the thing that made me change my mind is it's a very selfish attitude. I don't mind stupid rich people getting fooled. I do mind people that are susceptible to being sucked in on something that aren't necessarily rich, but will pay for those type of things because they're just susceptible to paying for them, then that's where the fishing for whales becomes a problem type thing. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm like, okay, no, I agree that that is an issue. And that is something where it should be one or the other, as you say. It should be a full price game or a cat in my face or microtransactions, and never the twain shall meet. Like, they shouldn't be doing the same thing, either one or the other. Either reduce the overall price of your game or don't have microtransactions. Or as you say, like, maybe it should be just be you should only have microtransactions in a free game, or you are susceptible for criticism. Where I think the extra criticism comes with Dragon's Dogma 2 is the fact that they didn't have the microtransactions available for reviews and then instantly had them like a couple of days later. That is very yes. shady behavior, and that is something that I'm like, okay, I'm glad I didn't support your game.
For those in the know, that's called the Activision. That's what we like to call that one. It's very shady. We're not happy with it, but it happens. Mm-hmm. And and similar, I mean, the Dragon's Dogma thing as well, like, it calls the thing that I keep kind of alluding to with the kind of big boys in video game media at the moment, the video game journalists, where, well, not so much the journalists, but I'm assuming the sites, whoever does the decisions around marketing and what have you. But there's a whole thing of we'll say a lot of really good reviews going out for Dragon's Dogma, despite there being quite large flaws on the PC and the PC version being played.
Yes, as well,
And still getting top marks. And it's something we saw with Cyberpunk 2077. Like, that was getting full top marks all over the place on release. And we've seen it with other games. And the whole thing with Star Wars, the whole thing with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Like, no one talks about the textures on that game, although that's kind of sorted, but not. But we'll see. I haven't gone back to that game yet. But it's something we're seeing where they get top marks across the board, and then it comes into the consumer's hand, and they go, well, why was this problem not mentioned? And it's because they want to appease a higher, to get the advertising money, they want to get
exclusives. It's one of those things where you can see it slightly both ways, but it's one of those things where I don't entirely blame reviewers for that, because you are often told, you often get like a press kit thing that has information or like stuff that you have to read through, and it says, like, these are known issues, so please ignore these sort of thing. And you don't know whether that's known issues that's going to be dealt with in a day one patch, which when you're playing in a preview situation can be more difficult to weigh up. And if you've been asked to particularly ignore something so that you can review it, you almost can't go against that. But I don't think that's necessarily like the reviewers being shady. I think that's slightly shady practices from like the PR side.
Yeah, basically. And there's certainly ways around that. You can refuse the NDA. You can buy your own version on release. You can do reviews in progress. There's like loads of ways around it. Not all of them I particularly agree with, but you know, it's a shady thing. Anyway, Dragon's Dogma 2 seems to be going down well with quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
I hear the game on PC of slaughtering all the NPCs so the game runs faster is quite enjoyable.
I'm not sure that necessarily works, but people are trying it.
there's like a dedicated list online to, okay, you can kill these people and not affect the game, like storylines and shopkeeps and what have you. But so that is quite humorous, although quite gross at the same time.
But there's also been some good like videos of just like action happening kind of, you know, dynamically in the open world, just things going on and, you know, ogres being dealt with. And yeah, like it, as I said, it looks like a fun game. It's a shame that they've marred the positive reception of that game with some crappy microtransaction like dealings and stuff. But hey,
anyway,
on to Rise.
Let's get on.
Yes,
yes, Rise of the Ronin.
The other thing that did give me some misgivings about going into the Rise of the Ronin was the fact that Ghost of Tsushima is probably my favorite game of all time now, and I was worried that this would very much be living in the shadow of that.
Yes.
And it does to an extent. And I don't think, and like I said that up front, because I don't think I can get through a review of Rise of the Ronin without mentioning it. It seems to be reviewer lore. I don't think I've seen anyone actually get through a review without mentioning it. And that's kind of fair, because they are thematically similar. and you know, like they are both kind of open world samurai kind of settings, and in a similar time period, and both PlayStation 5 or well, both PlayStation exclusives. And it's a shame because Ghost of Tsushima really did set a very high bar, which is the other reason to kind of think that this might be living in its shadow. And there are some things that it doesn't live up to. Like graphically, Ghost of Tsushima, I think, outshines this a little bit. And the kind of the cinematic presentation of it is like absolutely top quality, and this kind of pales slightly in comparison. It's not like shabby in either regard, but it doesn't quite measure up to those very, very high marks that kind of lifts Ghost of Tsushima into possibly my favorite game of all time. But that said, like, yeah, as I said, Ghost of Tsushima's opening particularly is very strong and very memorable and very good. And again, this doesn't quite live up to that high mark. But I am very glad to say that despite those misgivings and despite that being slightly magnified by the comparison of the two openings of the game, I am very much enjoying Rise of the Ronin and not feeling that it's a, you know, poor man's second cousin kind of, you know, once removed sort of thing. It does feel like enough of its own thing. It's doing enough things differently. And there are actually some parts where I think it actually goes above and beyond what Ghost of Tsushima was doing. And preface this slightly with I'm probably like 6 to 8 hours in, so I haven't kind of got too far with it. I haven't opened up too much of the kind
you
of skills.
You didn't get
and stuff
an advanced
like
copy.
No. So I purchased my copy and I've been playing it since day one. It is a full price game. It doesn't seem to suffer from the microtransaction problem, so that's a good tick in its box when we're talking about Dragon's Dogma as well. Anyone that's been listening to the show recently, I got a review copy of Wolong, kind of after release when it actually got some DLC stuff that I still haven't quite got to, I don't think. But I've really been enjoying that game. So that was my other slight concern, is this is Team Ninja's next game after that, I think, basically. I don't think there's anything in between. So I was a bit worried that this wouldn't be quite as good as that. But I do think that whereas Wolong Fallen Dynasty was a bit more of a Souls-like game, this feels a bit more just like a open world hack and slash action game, which it feels very much like it's in Team Ninja's, you know, wheelhouse of making a good version of that. The thing that separates it apart from Ghost of Tsushima or kind of other titles as well, is that because of the time period it happens in, it's basically while Japan's going through this big revolution of opening out to the rest of the world again, it's the kind of the end of the, well, endish of the Shogunate era. So anyone that's watching Shogun on Disney Channel at the moment, I think it's set a bit later than that from what I understand. I haven't actually started watching Shogun at the moment. But basically, Japan is opening up to the Western world a little bit. There's things where you see where people are trying to put treaties together between Japan and Western societies. So there is a bit where you see the USA Navy and you deal with a couple of them. And there's kind of British people around as well, as far as I understand it as well. And I think the opening level, I'm not sure if the opening level was British Navy or USA, but you are sneaking onto a kind of big boat and dealing with a colonel chap there in kind of all his regalia. And basically they've got guns. And that's one of the things that separates this a bit different. Like there are, you know, there was some weaponry beyond swords and stuff that wasn't necessarily melee based in Ghost of Tsushima. But that's taken even further in this. You tend to have two melee weapons that you can switch through, and then a secondary weapon, which you can switch back and forth as well. And initially that's kind of shurikens and a rifle. And I'll say this, some of this may vary depending on what class you're playing with, basically. And I think I chose the breaker class, which had a particular set of like weaponry and skills and setup to start with. So I start with dual swords, And then I can have a secondary weapon, which I'm not quite as good at, basically. I started with a rifle. And then I think I picked up shuriken somewhere and I picked up a bow. And that's your kind of secondary weapons that are non-melee based. You know, they kind of got a bit of range to them. But you can kind of mix that into the combat as you're going. So, and that combat does feel a bit different, and it feels like it's slightly more technologically advanced than it was in Ghost of Tsushima, which would make me guess, and I haven't double-checked this, but it would make me guess that it's a slightly later time period, especially as you're dealing with, you know, more of a Western influence than you were previously.
Right. So, I mean, ignoring the comparisons to other games,
yes,
and the era it's set in, what, because this is a narrative game, what is the story, what is the starting of this game?
So the setup is that you and your kind of, I think it's your sister, and you're kind of rescued from a village that is attacked and then taken under the wing of this sensei. And you're trained as, I think they call them twin blades, but it's like the two of you very much act together, and you're two parts of the thing. And you can actually switch between those two people in the opening level. I won't entirely spoil, but basically at some point you have to make a decision between which one of those two and which one you carry on with as a character, basically. You can also do a whole character building thing. I didn't know that was going to be in this game. I spoke about that with Wolong, that I thought it would be better if they focused on. I completely ignored the character building. Managed to completely jump over it. There's two characters you can build at the beginning, and then, like, don't spend long on the second character. That's all I'll say, basically.
I'll send you my formula for wrestler Tim, and then you can import him
into that.
I'd like. I'd like a character creator for one, like a single character creator suite. That will just allow me to import my character into different games.
Yes, that would be really good if it was just a console-based thing rather than a game-by-game-based thing, so you didn't have to recreate yourself every time. That would be a very good idea, Colm.
That's what they tried to pitch to us with the old NFTs.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Like,
the blockchain stuff. You don't have to do that with NFTs. You could just do it without that technology anyway. But, hey. But yeah, so very much there is a kind of switching between character element to this as well. So even when you're not paired up with your twin, there are parts in the game where it's just you and you just have to get on with it. And that's kind of the after the kind of prologue part of the game, you're very much left on your own and kind of you're left to fend for yourself. But then you come across other characters that you can then partner up with at different stages. Eventually, it looks like you'll be able to choose who you're partnering with. And I haven't got to this stage yet, but eventually it looks like you'll be able to have multiple partners. You can also play through the game in co-op, and you can play up to three players in co-op as well, which, if anyone is out there that is listening, hello, and if you want to co-op with me, Coleman refused because he's a git. Dan also refused.
I don't have the game.
He's also a git. Yeah, exactly. Gits, the pair of you. But if anyone does have the game and is looking at co-op, yeah, I advise doing that because that's great. But if anyone's looking to co-op, I'd very much be interested in co-op. I don't particularly want to do it with randoms. And it might be, you know, I don't know how it works. I guess it's drop-in, drop-out co-op, but it could be for quite a long time if you're going to do that for a level. But it seems to be when you're going into a level, you can kind of pick an AI character or pick to play multiplayer. And so I guess you might have to play all the way to the end of a level for that to be a thing. As I said, haven't tried that out yet, but I'd very much like to in time for next week. So I have a bit of time over this weekend. So if anyone is playing the game and would like to do some co-op, give me a shout on the Discord server or elsewhere, and we can possibly arrange that, because that would be some cool stuff to do. So the fact that it's got co-op in the game is a differentiator from other things that have gone before it as well. But I think that's a heavy feature of the game, whether you're playing with the AI and then can swap between them, because there's also a whole system. And again, we've seen this in other games, but there's a system where there's a kind of rock, paper, scissor relationship between the fighting styles. And you can have different fighting assaults associated with the weaponry that you're using. I haven't opened up too many of the fighting styles yet, so I haven't seen it. I think I've opened up an alternative, but I haven't opened up that many alternatives. And you seem to get them and inherit them from deepening bonds with the other AI characters as well. So, like, you can give them gifts to deepen the bonds, or you can just kind of play with them for a longer period of time, and that will kind of make their fighting styles available to you as well, basically. And there seems to be other ways for that to happen in the world as well. But as I said, there's a rock, paper, scissors relationship between those styles. So you could be facing off against enemies that your style is weak against or your style is strong against. And that's kind of designated by a little up or down arrow next to their kind of health bar. And so you're kind of best off with either switching styles to account for that, or you can actually just entirely switch if you're in an area where you're partnered with another person. You can actually switch to that other person so that you can overcome them with a different style that they're using, basically. And that's particularly advantageous early on because you won't have been very good at developing that style. You might not be using that style very much as well. And for instance, my secondary weapon is available to me, but I'm not very good with it, basically. So it's something where, yeah, it's advantageous to switch to another character in a battle, and that could be something you do on the fly. If you've got multiple enemies going on, you could have, you know, ones that you're good against and ones that you're not. The other way you can approach that is, and especially when you're by yourself, is there's stealth elements to the game, so you can stealth around and take people out and assassinate people before you actually engage with all the enemies. And you've got a kind of grapple hook that can get you through the environment, so that can get you up to higher ledges. But you can also unlock skills where you can grapple hook people. And that's one of the base skills that I had with my the class that I picked. But then I can also open up so I can pull people up with my grappling hook to a height so I can assassinate them and kind of hide them on a roof and then kind of carry on being stealthy. So, like, there's various different approaches and different things you can go with. There's also something, bits of equipment that you open up early on. And one of the things that wasn't available in Ghost of Tsushima, but we've seen in games like Assassin's Creed, is a kind of glider that you can go with. So when you get up to a height, you can just jump off, pop that out, and then glide to a different thing. And that helps you get between rooftops, and or you can assassinate people from the air doing that way and stuff like that as well. Helps you get to like little islands that are isolated. So far, I mentioned this before, I didn't really talk about exactly what it was, but the one thing that I think holds it above Ghost of Tsushima when in comparison is the fact that the world seems slightly less cookie cuttery. And this is a criticism I have of a lot of Assassin's Creed games. It's like, oh, here's another fort, and I know what that layout means, and I know what that means, and how many enemies are going to be here, and this type of thing. And also, when you're going between those environments, it can feel like the rest of the world isn't really lived in. You just come across instances of things happening, stuff like that. Whereas in Rise of the Ronin, what I think is a really good asset to it is the fact that the world seems kind of believable in layout and structure, and also in just in terms of going from like town to or a little a village and going in between those things, you'll have people that seem to be going about their business and doing things. And there was one encounter I had where there was just a couple of bandits who happened to be sitting around in a fishing village. And I thought, oh, this is going to be another one of those enclosures. And it wasn't. It was just a couple of bandits just happened to be sat in a like next to a couple of fishing boats and next to the shore type thing. And there's other people just like between environments, like seem to be carrying things between towns and doing stuff like that. And I think the world and the environment seems quite fleshed out. There also seems to be bigger cityscapes than there were in Ghost of Tsushima. And again, right, we've seen that type of thing in the Assassin's Creed type open worlds where you get these historical, like kind of big cities. But and I've only been to Yokohama so far in Rise of the Ronin. But there's a whole like pleasure district there, and there's the kind of, oh, I have to say, one encounter they had there, slight spoilers, but I think it's worth it. Like, there was a mission where I had an old school camera, and I was having to photograph people in the pleasure house type thing, and kind of not in compromising positions, but they were having meetings there, and I was getting photos of the people having meetings. And then I encountered a really drunk samurai who then like took me outside because they say that you can't have fights in the pleasure house. So he like kind of took me outside and you know, like, let's go outside and settle this type thing. But he was really, really drunk. So whenever we were doing the fight, he was doing like commando rolls to like come up and slash me. But like just falling over while he was doing the commando rolls and just like really drunkenly swaying around, like fighting in a proper drunken style, but not in a deliberate, you know, drunken master type way. In a
so
real
drunken master doesn't work with swords.
Yes, not right. So good. But that was one of the funniest fights I've had in one of these games ever. It was just a real standout moment. It's something that I was like, and again, that feels like where the world feels nicely fleshed out and there seems to be some good details to it. And as I said, the opening of the game didn't impress me as much, but a lot of the little touches that you see in the world and going around and doing things, that's where the game has really impressed me. And that drunken samurai fight was just absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Okay. Any other bits to polish off your review here?
No, as I said, I will report back when I played a bit more. I'd like to play a bit of the co-op just to see how that functions and how that operates. But overall, I am very pleased with my purchase of the game. Really enjoyed the time that I've had with the game so far. That mileage might vary based on, you know, where you go and what you discover and what you do. But I kind of went back and polished off all of one area because you get like a bonus for doing that. I kind of like the way that the upgrade system works as well. Like there's bits where like you might have, it's kind of divided into strength, dexterity. And I the build that I went with had a head start on dexterity, but you can put your points into anywhere, but you'll have certain things that will give you points in say strength or dexterity and certain points that can be used across any of those things as well. But then there'll be certain skills that can only be locked with strength or dexterity or intellect and stuff like that. It just makes it so that you can't solely concentrate on one thing and one way of doing things. But it kind of feels that, yeah, it feels like I'm not being forced down one path. It feels like all of those different options are fairly open to me, which feels quite good, basically. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Got a bit of time over the weekend when I'm not working and doing other stuff, but I'm looking forward to really getting deeply stuck into this game because I've really enjoyed it so far. So yeah.
Okay. Well, that's available now. It's a PlayStation 5 exclusive. You can get it for £69.99 of your English pounds.
I did get it for a bit less than that and give
yeah, I was looking around
because yeah.
Yeah, I was looking around at the physical versions of the game, about a £5 discount on that one. I know it was a lot earlier, a lot lower when you bought it a lot earlier. So I'm assuming that.
Right. Okay.
That seems to be what happens when you buy a physical game. People say not to pre-order games, just wait till they've come out and they go down or whatever. But if you want to be like a day one player, then you need to pre-order the game physically and you need to do it way in advance. That seems to be the tip.
I will give a shout out to the game collection because I really tested them because I only ordered it a couple of days beforehand. It was just before the reviews came out. But I ordered it, got it for £62 and they got it to me on day of release again, which they haven't let me down on that so far, touch wood. So yeah, I'm just very impressed with them as a service. They're someone you recommended to me. We're not getting paid to advertise them or whatever, but just giving a shout out because it's a company that isn't Amazon and isn't game and is good at what they do. So I like to, you know, give that a shout out.
And their Easter sale started today.
Ooh, might go check that.
Get yourself a copy of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Switch for $34.95.
It's rare that that's on sale. So yeah, that's
it's
not
rare. It's rare to see Nintendo, official Nintendo games go on sale. So yeah. All right. Rise of the Ronin. Now, I'm not going to go into Pacific Drive. I'm just saying that's what I've been playing. I did get it running on the Steam Deck. I do not recommend playing it on the Steam Deck. Only play this game if you have a PC powerful enough to run the game because it is not look good on the Steam Deck. I've got it to a point where I don't mind playing it for like 20 minutes on the tube, but I would not want to mainline this game on the Steam Deck at all.
Okay. Maybe save some of your upgrading stuff and do that on the tube, basically, rather than actually playing the game itself, sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Finish a level at home, and then, you know, on my way to work, on my commute, I can do all the upgrades and things. But even then, it's such a sluggish thing to walk around the car and that. Yeah, it's not. You have to downgrade that game a lot to get it running decently. Okay.
But it's not optimized or recommended for.
It's apparently optimized. It's verified for Steam Deck.
Oh,
it does not look good on a Steam Deck. I would not recommend that game on a Steam Deck. So we'll see if there's any kind of patching coming around the corner for optimization. We'll see.
Speaking of optimization, quickly though, if you're not going to go into specific drive too much, I mentioned Rainbow Reactor Fusion last week. I was contacted by the devs after sending them links to last week's show. And they've taken some of the criticisms on board, not necessarily of mine, but just in general, are improving the visuals in the game. Kev and I should say, are hopefully recording a VRB this weekend. So I will go into more detail on that. But I just wanted to mention, they're upgrading the graphics and a few other bits and bobs as well. So, I will go into more detail on VRB, but just wanted to mention it here as I talked about it last week.
They listened to your review.
They actually listened to the podcast.
They got all the way through it. They didn't use the chapters to skip forward.
Yeah, that's why I'm also happy to re-mention them again as well. You know, that was nice. They listened to us. They may have just been searching for Rainbow Reactor Fusion and seeing what popped up. But yeah, they listened to us. That's nice. It's good.
Okay. Well, onwards with the news, and there's a couple of one just hit just before we started, in fact, which I didn't get on the list, but I'll mention quickly. But yes, Nintendo have confirmed that their testing department will be experiencing layoffs. There are rumors that because there's no major first-party games on the horizon from Nintendo at the moment. Like, we don't know anything about Metroid 2 at the moment, or Metroid Prime. What is it? 3, 4? I forget what we're waiting for now.
I think it's 4. We've had a trilogy.
Reggie Fils-Aimé was employed when they were by Nintendo when they announced it. He made the announcement. Let's not forget. Yeah. But yes, and the Switch 2 has apparently been delayed. We don't know. That's just rumors at the moment. We don't know.
Yeah, but does sound like that's been confirmed by a few different sources, even though it hasn't been officially confirmed. But it does seem like everything lines up, the fact that the Switch 2 is now coming out in the early part of next year rather than the late part of this year, which seems to be the case. So
this comes from Kotaku, and they have they put out a report, and Nintendo released a statement which they've corroborated on everything now. It's the testing department that will be seeing layoffs over at, which they've not gone into detail how many people that will involve. But two people who worked for the testing department have spoken out and said that it could potentially affect over 100 workers. So not the best. And then just before we started recording, we got word of Sega doing some layoffs. With some of the internal studios that we dealt with before. Creative Assembly, Sonic Dream Team, Hardlight, Relic Entertainment, they've ruled.
They're actually selling the whole of Relic, and then there's layoffs in the other departments that you mentioned, or the other studios that you mentioned.
Yes.
It's not good, you know, two of the big old school, like, these used to be the console wars between Sega and Nintendo, but they two companies that seem to have resisted so far doing this. And it's just a shame that they are also now joining the ranks of, and I would say by the sounds of it, like any people affected is bad, but it doesn't sound like these are quite as widespread as we've seen in other video game companies. They're not affecting as many people. Again, with Nintendo, though, I'm wondering, because they talk about the testing department again, we've heard a few of these being the case, and I don't know. I really want to speak to a game dev or someone who can perhaps correct me or give me some more information on this, but I'm wondering if AI is affecting testing and
You are thinking of QA. This is a testing department, not a QA department.
Right, and but how does that differ? I would have thought this was testing for software stuff as well. No, is that not
hardware similar mainly. Role? It's hardware and software, but I think that's meant to be a different role entirely. But
right, okay.
No, I don't think AI is affecting QA testing. If there right. were, we would have heard a lot more people speaking out about it at this point.
Mm.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Anonymously yeah, or not. Yeah. Right. Okay, moving on. So in the eternal struggle of Embracer Group to try and minimize their debt that they've been accumulating ever since trying to do a big deal that fell through, they've sold back Gearbox to Take-Two. They took them.
Great.
They got rid of. They held the ball for a bit, and we handed it yep. back.
Well, see, I was going to say Embracer trying to do the Katamari approach to acquiring game studios, and apparently it's now all falling apart. But you know,
I was going to say the Michael Jackson way of acquiring game studios. If you ever watched that,
moonwalking away from the deal, yeah.
No, do you not remember the documentary that got him in trouble in the first place, and the thing with Bashir, and he's just walking around a store, go one of those, two of those, two of those, one of those, one of those. Like he's just pointing things out and buying them regardlessly. But yes, Embracer are in a lot of trouble at the moment, so they've offloaded They've offloaded Gearbox Entertainment back to Take-Two for a cool
yep.
$460 million.
I'd like to see a list of what Embracer still owns, mainly because you know if they're going to sell them all from a bottom bargain thing, like maybe we can pick one up, Coleman, eh? Maybe we could have a little club together. Maybe buy a game studio. That'd be kind of nice.
Do you not remember we were going to buy Rocksteady off Warner Brothers? I'm quite glad we didn't do that at this point.
Well, maybe we could have given them some better directions and less live service microtransactions overlording.
All right, guys, what Batman game you... Take it away. yes, anyway, so along with Gearbox Software, that includes... along with Gearbox Entertainment, that includes Gearbox Software, Gearbox Montreal, Gearbox Montreal, yep. Gearbox Studio Quebec, and the franchises Borderlands, Tiny Tina's Wonderland, mm-hmm. Homeworld, Risk of Rain, Brothers in Arms, and Duke Nukem. Duke Nukem, Tim.
That valuable IP.
Come get some debt from Embracer. that sale is expected to go through by the end of June. So, yes, I'm assuming.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, over on the Xbox side, I say yes. Interestingly, pretty tedious, I thought. There's been a leak. There's been a leak of some images.
And we see this.
Xbox particularly like to do this. They go, right, our mainline console, what do we do just before we do the big improvement? Make it white, remove the disc tray. And that's exactly what they've done by the looks of these images that have been leaked. This was first reported by Xpucer, and then that was confirmed by a few different sources, but mainly The Verge, who corroborated the images, saying that they look genuine and they've seen documents detailing the console's specifications. It is literally an Xbox Series X that is white mm-hmm. without the disc yes. tray. No size.
Yes.
No. It doesn't look like they've slimmed it down, trimmed it down, anything at all. It just looks like a Series X, but white. And that looks like it's going to get show dirt on it so quick because it's just a big block of white.
Yes, that doesn't help. Also, it doesn't help make it more believable. This could be exactly what they're doing, and it's not entirely like Xbox to make this sort of move. But it also, this is a very easy Photoshop job. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it is.
I'm
just saying if you were going to Photoshop a fake Xbox, this would be a good thing to do. All you had to do, just remove the disc tray and turn it white. I'm trying to see, the colors probably look like they're probably right. In fact, the fact that one of them looks a bit more gray than white would kind of actually lead me to believe, they may have over-whited it if they were trying to fake it a bit. That's one of the things that maybe, yeah. But actually, it being lit in that way makes it slightly more believable. So I don't know if that's better or worse in some ways. But I think that actually makes it look like it possibly is more likely to be true. Also, I heard, and I think it was on Game Mess Mornings, that they were talking about this on Giant Bomb stuff, and just generally saying that, yeah, the difference in the heatsink and kind of the being able to change the heatsink and do things differently will make it so that they can sell this at a lesser price. So this could be a lesser priced version of the Xbox Series S. X rather, and that kind of appeals to me, because I don't know if this appeals to you as well, Common, but I think we're both in the situation where we've got an S, we found that to be a bit wanting in times. I don't actually mind having just a digital Xbox these days, but I would like it to have a bit more power. So if this could actually come out at a decent price, I might actually be more interested in this than the PlayStation Pro, possibly, because I can't, like, we didn't speak about this when you talk about the PlayStation Pro last week, but I can't see a good reason for me to spend more money on a Pro at the moment, basically. They didn't make a good case for that. And we haven't seen them market it or put it out.
Apparently, according to a lot of developers over at GDC, neither can they. So.
Yes, exactly. And that gives more credence to that. So in some ways, this is more attractive to me than a PlayStation Pro possibly. But yeah, okay. I'm not sure I'm ready to spend hundreds of pounds more on either yet, possibly. Yeah, don't know.
So I'm gonna let you in on a little secret, Tim.
Yes,
because you said we're both proud owners of an Xbox Series S. Xbox Series S is disconnected and in a box.
Oh,
my Xbox Series
Xbox
X
in a box. Is that an X Xbox?
Shush, Tim. My Xbox Series X is connected to my TV.
Oh,
I bought one because it was on sale a while ago. I
you
set it
sneaky
up.
Bugger, you keep on buying games consoles and not telling me about.
No, right. Let me explain. So I bought one because I was like, well, it's on sale. I want to get ready for Indiana Jones. Since I bought it, here's
ready
what's happened
Indy.
To me.
Yep.
I set it up. I haven't switched it back on since. So it just sits under the TV now, gathering dust, which is great, along with the Switch. Since I bought it, my PC went kaput and I had to do a complete new upgrade, which was a lot of money on top of that.
So now you've got a better PC, so it's even worth less to you than it was.
Yep. Xbox announced that their games have gone multi-platform.
Right, yeah. So we'll come to the PS5,
they're potentially about to wind up with an even cheaper version of the Xbox Series X that I probably would have gone for instead. Even though it does look hideous being in that white color. But I will give it this.
White fridge.
If you remember the Xbox fridge meme that became a reality.
Yes.
Having the Xbox in white does make for a better Xbox fridge, I think.
Because
it
that is
goes
true.
With the white goods.
I
with the white goods,
possibly
Tim.
Buy a white Xbox fridge.
Yes. Cover that in magnets and I'm all for it. Okay.
Magnets aren't
last
good for
bit
your Xbox Series X, Colin, just so you know.
But the fridge.
Just before you move on, though, I also, the thing that, and a few people have mentioned this online as well, but the thing that I would be even more interested in than this console would be if Xbox came out with a proper portable Xbox with a screen. Like that is something I'd be even more interested in. Not like the portal, but an actual proper console.
Well, let's talk about that, because Phil Spencer, he's all but admitted that there's an Xbox handheld in the works by the sounds of it. And a lot of people are running with this story. I heard this and kind of went, meh. And everyone seems to be rolling with it. So I thought I'd add it to the agenda. So they've been heavily rumored for a while to be working on an Xbox handheld. There was a thing, if you remember, all the court documents came out and we saw the revision of the Xbox with the circular Xbox Series X and all that kind of stuff.
That hasn't come
there
to
was,
fruition, though. Right? Unless this
not,
is,
that
unless
looks,
that
it,
big
it looks like
is wrong.
No, that looks like a digital version of the Xbox Series X. What they were putting forward is the mid-generation jump, like the PlayStation 5 Pro is the idea.
Yeah.
There were mentions of a handheld, which were brought up to Phil Spencer, and he said, that's an old design, like, we decided not to go ahead. Since then, he was speaking to Polygon, And he said that he was talking about the various PC gaming handhelds, much like the Steam Deck and but many others that actually run on Windows and not on Linux.
Right. Yeah.
And saying that he likes them, but he'd like the experience to feel more like an Xbox. So have all your games associated, your save files, being able to boot straight into the app. As he said it, likening it to when you turn your Xbox on the TV. Boom, that on a PC and a handheld PC.
Yeah.
So
and that's what I would be
interested. It looks, yes. So it sounds like then, you know, they haven't confirmed, they've denied an Xbox handheld or being in the works specifically based on the court documents, not the possibility of them doing them. We saw there was a whole thing of like an internal game jam dev jam, I guess, where they were working on interfaces for existing PC handhelds to make them more PC, Xbox compatible. And it looks like there's some interest within Xbox to create a handheld. I'd argue. Well, actually, no, I think it's a good idea. I was just about to argue it's not a good idea, but no, I think it is. I don't necessarily think they need to make a handheld. If they worked with the PC handhelds that are already on the market and ones that are currently in progress, I think there's something to be done there, a partnership of sorts, rather than just making a brand new thing as well, especially because there does seem to be some kind of internal struggles with Xbox hardware behind the scenes, even though it's been denied, but then it's resurfaced and it's kind of going round and round in circles. So maybe not start putting all your R&D into new hardware and work on software instead.
But see, I do think that there's some mileage to having a portable Xbox that maybe it has streaming capabilities, and you know, we were talking about the Logitech G Cloud or whatever it's called, as an option. But I think actually having a dedicated handheld that possibly could do streaming, but like you say, can boot your games in a handheld environment and stuff like that, and having that as a dedicated thing would be good. But then I don't know if there's the possible facility, and presumably not with Steam, because Steam has obviously got their own handhelds in the deck, and maybe that's something where they would be resistant to possibly partnering with Xbox for this, but maybe go with, you know, one of the other really popular things, like the very popular Epic Game Store, but like someone like that, and they're actually having access to that, because they've talked about that possibly coming to Xbox. Now, have you had a handheld that could do everything the Xbox can, including that sort of thing as well, then I think you're getting to an even more exciting proposition, if it can do, you know, everything that some of those catch-all ones can do, that's more interesting. As I said, I don't know if getting Steam on there might be a slightly more pie in the sky type thing and less likely to happen, but yeah, I think there's some interest there. And as I said, even though I'm slightly interested in the possible other console, I'm even more interested in possibly having a handheld, because that just gives me more capabilities of second screening or being able to take it out and about. So yeah, I quite like that idea.
So here's the thing with Steam, because Xbox games, they do tend to make them available on PC day and date as the console, and make them all available through Game Pass. On Steam, you can buy Xbox games. I've got Sea of Thieves on Steam. It plays on my Steam Deck very well. You can't play Game Pass through there. And in fact, the way that they worked around it was going through a series of instructions to basically get a browser, a clone of a browser, to open up in full screen and go directly to the Game Pass website and do it through playing it through browser and making it look like an app. So there isn't actually like proper support for Game Pass, and there's no dedicated app or anything. This stuff seems a lot easier on the Windows PCs, like the Lenovo that seems to be doing the rounds at the moment, or the Inodin, all those kind of dedicated PC handhelds, rather than the Linux-based ones. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens going forward. But I think a wrapper is a better idea rather than a dedicated handheld for Xbox, especially with the way that they seem to be working more.
The last time a wrapper bought out a handheld, that didn't go well, Colin.
The Soldier Boy? Okay. All right. That's probably in hindsight, it's not that long ago, but it feels like forever ago because I think it's pre-pandemic.
Yes, and everything pre-pandemic seems like it was 20 years ago now. But yeah.
Okay. All right, that is all the news. So we like to do this little thing at the end of the show where we give you lots of links and things and advertise to you, basically. And first off, we'd like you to go over to tpublic.com/stores/brb and check out the range of merch we have available. We've got t-shirts, we've got stickers, masks, mugs, all the kind of regular merchandise you'd be expecting. And also a lot of it is BRB themed, but there's also stuff that is themed off other video games, including being themed off of Tabletop Tuesday with the cool Kaiju t-shirt, which I'm a big fan of. And also we've got some with Dan's face, I think. I
don't know. Don't mention Dan's face. Like, sales go down whenever we mention Dan's face, and Dan mentions it every week. So
yes,
let's not mention it.
So once again, that's TeePublic. That is TeePublic. I forgot to put it on the screen. That is teepublic.com/stores/brb for our range of merchandise. And I did mention Tabletop Tuesdays there, and that's when Tim gets to talk about Tabletop Tuesday.
Yeah. Big thanks for Kingmaker and everyone that came along to support that last week. It was a really big game. Everyone that played it really liked it. It went down pretty well. It was big and complicated, but we managed to get one group to actually complete a game, which we didn't think was going to be possible in the time that we had.
Wow. Did they speed run it?
No. Like, they were guided through it, and we did play the slightly more simplified variant of it, the Kingmaker the Second, as it was crowned after its Kickstarter and stuff. As I said, that went down well. Winner seemed happy with their game. That was all good. This week's game for this coming Tuesday is a cute little game called Mycelial, and I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's about mushrooms. I hate mushrooms, Coleman. Like, I don't like, love you them. Know, hate them as an entity or as a general concept. I just don't like eating them. But
you're not a fun guy, Tim.
No, but these mushrooms are a bit too cute to eat as well. If you look at the box art and the stuff going on with Mycelial, they're cute little mushrooms. You wouldn't want to eat them anyway.
I would.
But
I love a mushroom.
It's a game. It's a kind of a deck building game, which, you know, I'm a fan of. It's got some other like pool building and other stuff elements to it as well. It looks like a really fun game, really highly rated on Board Game Geek. I think it gets a 7.5, which for them is a very good rating. It looks like a really fun game. Anyone doesn't know, each and every Tuesday we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Stoke Newington. We have a different feature game most weeks. If you play that feature game, you have a chance of winning a copy of the game at the end of the week. And you can win a copy of Mycelial by coming along and trying it out on the evening. There is more details on the top left-hand corner of Big Red Barrel. You can join the over 2,100 members in our meetup group by searching for Tabletop Tuesday on meetup.com, or just go to Big Red Barrel and check out the top left-hand corner, or just come along to Loading Bar in Stoke Newington. Join us on Tuesday evening. We'll be there from about 7:30. There are people that are usually there a little bit before that as well. But if you want to come along from 7:30 to 10:30, that's generally when we run the event. And we'll give a copy away at 10:30 that very evening. Should be a really good prize. Should be a really fun evening. As Coleman alluded to, you can come along and be a fun guy. It'll hopefully be very busy, but well, there should be not much room. But, you know, generally we'll be able to get you in somewhere. Just on that note, the Tuesdays after a bank holiday aren't always busy, but I'm hoping this being a really attractive game will attract some more people to come in that might not have done otherwise. It should be a really fun night, should be a really good game, but your chances of winning the game may be increased if other people don't come along. So see how you do, come along, play the game, possibly win it, join us on Tuesday.
Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Stoke, Newington. Be there on the 2nd. Of April in the evening.
Yes.
Day directly after Bank Holiday Monday. Don't know why I'm going deep for that one. Anyway, thank you if you've listened all the way to the end of this show or watched all the way into the way of this show. If you've enjoyed it, you are a strange little soldier, but we do love you all the same. Thank you very much for listening and watching. We won't do questions, one, because we haven't got any, but two, if I seem distracted, my headphones keep saying battery low, and I need to charge them very quickly before they cut out. So,
That's me, Common. I'm just whispering to you. My battery, like, that's me. My battery is getting low. I'm quite run down.
Battery, been a tough battery week. Low.
I need a 4-day weekend that I'm not going to get anymore, but hey.
Okay. Check us out on bigredbarrel.com. We've also got social media available on Facebook, X, and Threads at Big Red Barrel. We have a YouTube called Big Red Barrel TV. You can like, comment, and subscribe to this channel and ring the little bell. Ring the little bell. And that will tell you when all our videos go live. And when live streams are public, I think we're pretty close on the getting ready to do that one. You'll get notified when we go live as well, which will be a handy thing. We might even try simulcasting. Let's see. One step at a time. Crack open the old Twitch channel or something. He's not best pleased. It's a bit uncomfortable inserting all these bits in there. But yes, also on bigredbarrel.com, we have a link to our Discord. You can go over there. You can leave us questions. You can chat with us. You can pick up some free games, actually, if you go to the PC section. Ooh. I've got loads of codes in there. No new ones for a little while, I think. So empty out my stock because it's getting way too big. And Kev's having a mini heart attack with all the notifications when I put new ones in. You can also leave us... Go on.
You wrap up. But there's one thing I was going to discuss before we bounce out, if we've got time, but still.
We don't.
Want me to do that before or afterwards? Okay.
We don't. Headphones are going to go off.
Okay.
What was I going to say? You can leave us a review on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to us on, and links are available in the show notes of this here episode. They will give you all the social media and the website and everything like that, if you please. Okay, so we've got to get out of here, Tim, and I will say, for episode 856 of BRB UK, I have been Coleman,
and I might have been Tim.
And Dan has been absent. Hopefully he's back next week. We'll see. Until next time, dear listeners, dear viewers, a goodbye.
You and your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.